The Copywriter Club podcast is sponsored by AirStory, the writing platform for professional writers who want to get more done in half the time. Learn more at airstory.co/club.
What if you could hang out with seriously talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Rob and I do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 40 as we chat with A-list copywriter Kim Krause-Schwalm about writing effective direct response controls, what steps other writers can take now to get a control beater, writing in the health and finance niches, and her ongoing efforts to help other women succeed in the business.
Hi, Kim. Hi, Rob. Welcome.
Kira, Kim, it's good to talk to you guys.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Kim, we are so excited to have you here, partly because, you know, I've known about you for, you know, several years. I think I remember reading an interview that Clayton Makepeace did with you a number of years ago and have sort of followed your career. And I know Kira and you have connected recently as well. And so we're thrilled to be able to talk with you. But I think where we'd really like to get started is just your story, how you got into copywriting.
Well, I didn't know copywriting existed as a profession until I was working in marketing for a major publishing company called Phillips Publishing. I don't know if you've heard of it, but for many years, it was considered one of the powerhouse direct response marketing companies. In fact, it was bigger than Agora at the time. It was up there with Boardroom and other, you know, Rodale and other major companies in terms of working with the very top level copywriters, you know, the ones that, you know, we all consider legends like Gary Bensavenga, Jim Rutz, Clayton Makepeace, et cetera. So I went to work for them back in 1992, which seems like an eternity ago. I actually had marketing management and brand management experiences with other companies. I had an MBA in marketing and, you know, I was just full bore marketing, but I always could write copy. It was always one of the many hats I wore in different jobs. And it was the same story at Phillips, but at Phillips, it was one of these things that was really valued because so much of their business was built on strong copy. A lot of my different roles, I would write copy as well as direct marketing efforts. I ended up, after being there just a short while, I was asked to help them launch their supplement business to promote supplements formulated by Dr. Julian Whitaker. So I helped launch and run that company, which is called Healthy Directions, and you may have heard of it, and grew that to like a $23 million business within 3 years and worked in some other parts of the company. But after a while, I realized, you know, I've always enjoyed copywriting. I was seeing the kind of lifestyle and income potential that the A-level freelance copywriters enjoyed. And that's when I became intrigued about it. And when I was pregnant with my first child, I started thinking about it even more, went back to work after having him, and then after about 6 or 7 months, decided to take the leap and become a freelance copywriter. And that was about 19 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So when you took that leap, what did it look like immediately? Did you have jobs, gigs lined up, or were you starting from scratch?
I had really the best possible situation. There was a supplement company in my area. I knew the person who owned it, and he hired me into a retainer arrangement, which was going to guarantee me basically about 90% of my salary that I was leaving, but it was only going to take about half of my time.
Wow.
So I would be able to bring on other clients. So this is why I was able to walk out of a $100,000 a year salary job in 1998 and keep my full-time nanny and just start full speed. Had my one client, he referred me to a few others. And before I knew it, like the first year I made 50% more.
Wow. Did you start out with immediate successes from the stuff that you were writing? Did you have immediate control beaters, or did you take time to learn the business and figure out what you were doing in order to get to that level?
Definitely the latter. I mean, like anyone, I had to climb the copywriting ladder from the bottom. I did not start off writing those 24-page magalogs with royalty potential that, you know, I knew I eventually wanted to get to. I had never written something like that as an in-house marketing person. The type of things that I was good at or had experience with were inserts that wrote along with newsletters or, you know, other types of back-end mailings, you know, smaller type promotions, you know, renewal inserts for publishers, that kind of thing. So that's how I mostly filled my schedule. For the supplement client I was working with, I was doing more than just copywriting. I was also doing marketing consulting. But, you know, I was writing catalog copy. I was writing renewals. I was writing all sorts of smaller type things for other clients, including the company that I left, which is P.S. always stay on good terms. You know, if you do take the leap and leave a company, like after I'd been out for about a year or so, they became by far my biggest client. But yeah, I had to write a lot of smaller, it was all flat fee, you know, the first, you know, couple years. And I eventually was able to convince one of my clients who was, he had a very small company promoting videos and books and that kind of thing. And he was actually writing his own direct mail letters, and they're actually pretty good. He actually studied with Ted Nicholas, you know, he's one of his students. So his, you know, his copy wasn't bad at all. It was quite good. But what I did was I convinced this client after I'd been working with him for maybe a year or so that, hey, you know, you really, maybe you should try a Magalog. I mean, they're really working well in the health space and you've never done one and I can write one for you and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I convinced him to let me write my first Magalog, which he paid me. It was actually a decent amount of money. It was a fraction of what I charge now, but I got paid to write it. There was no royalty or anything, but it was like, hey, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get my first real sample, right? As a Magalog. I wrote it for him. I probably should pull it out. I haven't looked at it probably in like 10 years. It would probably make me shudder to look at it, but you know, it wasn't terrible. I think it did okay for him. But more importantly, I had a printed Magalog control that I could show somebody. And sure enough, I don't know how much, it wasn't maybe a few months later, or I got a call from a supplement company down in Florida that somebody had referred me to. And he asked, hey, have you written Magalogs? Can I see a sample? What do you charge? I sent him this sample. I asked for actually a pretty comparable going rate. You know, it was not rock bottom by any means. It was about triple what I had charged to write this first one, and it had royalty potential. And he hired me to write a supplement Magalog. And so that's basically how I got that door opened.
So from the launch of your career as a copywriter until that point, it sounds like that was about 8 years?
No, I would say I'd have to go back and look at my timeline, but I would say that was just probably a few, just within the first 2 years.
Oh, okay.
Kim, I would love to hear more about the copywriter ladder because it's such a great visual. And I think especially for new copywriters, they can't totally see all of the rungs that they need to climb in order to successfully climb this ladder the way you have. So can you just kind of explain how it works and why why it works? Yeah, let's just start there.
It's just like any kind of career. You're not going to just jump out of college, you know, oh, I've got my bachelor's degree and someone's not going to hire you for $100,000 a year, you know, director of marketing job, right? You're going to have to start maybe as a marketing assistant and do a bunch of schlep work. And then you're going to maybe hopefully soon get promoted to marketing manager, et cetera, right? So we're all familiar with the concept of climbing the corporate ladder. So it's kind of the same thing with copy. It's a really challenging assignment to write a long form promo. And a lot of people, and probably not everybody in your audience, but a lot of people out there keep hearing about all the huge opportunity with royalties and with these, you know, this type of long form copy, which is, it's all true. I mean, there's definitely a lot of opportunity. But the reason why there's so much opportunity and the reason why it's lucrative is because very few people can really do it well, right? So it's not the kind of thing that you're going to just take a course and you're going to suddenly be able to do this like really well. I mean, there are always obviously exceptions, but most people aren't. So the way you really build your copywriting chops, aside from doing whatever training you can and reading everything you can and getting yourself on as many mailing lists as you can and looking at all your junk emails that send you to sales pages, et cetera, becoming a student of good copy, right? You have to start somewhere with your project. So you want to start with smaller projects that probably will be flat fee, you know, initially, and you do them well, right? And then you get more work and you get more work and then you start to get a reputation and other people want to hire you. And ideally, you're doing some good work for a big client that can actually step you up that ladder. So, for example, I started having some successes in the health and supplement space. And then somebody referred me to a financial publisher. They work with people like Jim Rutz and all these, you know, A-level copywriters, and they mailed a lot of names promoting their financial newsletters. I mean, this is way back in the early 2000s. The first things that I did for them was writing like one page or, you know, two page renewal letters, you know, that would be inserts that we got with the newsletter or be mailings or even emails. So I was just doing a whole slew of that kind of stuff, you know, flat fee and, you know, move on to the next one. And they were really happy with my work, especially I had this one renewal campaign that was like by far their most successful one that they'd ever had. So, you know, I had some successes with them. They're like, you know what, let's give Kim a shot at a Magalog, right? So that's how I got that opportunity. I worked with them, I can't remember, it's probably at least a year or so, you know, cranking out all this, you know, smaller type flat fee work. And they were impressed with my copy. And one of them even said, you know, I feel like you're a hidden gem. And then they gave me a shot. And I've told this story before in my boot camp that I had a few months ago. But I kind of made a classic rookie mistake. And that was, hey, I'm going to take this really out-of-the-box approach to this Magalog. And I ended up putting, I mean, it's actually a pretty good cover, but it has like a dinosaur on this Magalog, and it's like the change monster that ate the economy. This is when the economy was really like in the toilet. I mean, a really good copy. I had like Alan Greenspan on there, some other, you know, George W. Bush on the front cover. There's much more to the whole story, but to make a long story short, the first effort, and it went up against Jim Rutz. He had a very strong control, and it did not beat him, and it didn't do well, but it didn't do terribly. It just didn't beat Jim Rutz. Fortunately, my client was farsighted enough to say, hey, you know what, let's give Kim another shot. You know, it's not like just because you don't, smart companies realize that nobody bats 1,000, right? And sometimes that second effort or that third effort is going to be that one that really is the big winner. So they hired me again, like 6 or 8 months later to write a completely new package to go up against Jim Rutz. And this one, I took a more conservative, tried and true approach. You know, again, being a rookie, why would I not do that, right? You know, so I ended up getting a control and beating Jim Rutz. And that completely put me on the map as a copywriter.
So, Kim, what is your hit rate today? Do you win everything, or, you know, is it 50-50? Are you Gary Bensavenga level, you know, where nobody ever beats you? Like, what does that look like now?
I think they're all pretty much winning. I mean, I had one product. It's funny because for one particular client, I've written a lot for over the years. And I can't even tell you the exact number. I've probably had at least a dozen or more controls, because everything I've written has been a control for them. And in some cases, mailed for as long as 8 years.
Wow.
Or longer as a control, meaning multiple other packages have gone up against it. I think I finally hit one, like it was like maybe 2 years ago. And it was a product focused on cholesterol, or at least the positioning was. We just tested it with inserts and online promotions. And so that one, we just didn't really feel like we could get work. And I won't even name the person, but a person who is retired from copywriting, who is legendary, actually even gave me some tips and, you know, to try to get it to work with some other subsequent tests, and we still couldn't get it to work. So I think it was more of a product and market issue than copy. And I just want to point that out, too, because a lot of times it's not so much the hit rate. I mean, sometimes you can have the best copy in the world and something's not going to work. But yeah, I think my hit rate's pretty good. I'm trying to remember my one where I haven't beat the control. A lot of times, too, I'm doing a launch and it's just getting something new up and going. So it may not be testing against a control. It's testing against this ability to become a control, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I would say it's pretty high. I don't go around tracking it, but I honestly can't remember the last time it lost except for that.
Kim, I want to know what your business looks like today as far as where you're spending most of your time. Are you still working on supplements or finance projects? And, you know, are you juggling a couple of projects at once?
I'm always juggling a couple projects. What I try to do is schedule my time as far as new long form promos so that I would conceivably have one at a time for at least a 4-week period, knowing that there's always going to be some overlap because you can't always control when you're going to get the copy back from the client and what more work you're going to need to do with it, et cetera. And then there's always the time period where it's in design. And I do stay pretty involved through the design phase, because especially when it's something where it's tied to royalty, because I've had early on traumatic experiences related to that with bad design. And I'm like, no, you're going to kill my promo. There's always a little overlap, but I typically allow So what I'm spending most of my time on now is still what I've been doing all along, and that's mostly long form promos. I do have some smaller projects that I do for various clients that I'll bring in other copywriters to help me with, and I act more as a copy chief. But the majority of what I'm doing is long form promos.
Kim, what does your writing process look like? When you take an assignment, how much time do you spend doing research? What does that look like? You know, what are the kinds of things that you're doing in that phase? How much time are you spending writing and rewriting? What does the back and forth with the client look like?
So I would say normally it's about a week or so for research, and that can include everything from digging up studies to calling customers who use the product if it's a supplement. There's usually at least 2 weeks for the writing phase. I would say maybe 2 to 3 weeks, because then there's some procrastination period involved. And then there's like, oh, I got to get this done. So typically I like to tell a client 4 weeks, because sometimes there's usually what often happens between you guys and I and a thousand other people listening is I usually don't get started till like at least a week late because everything else is stacked up or taking longer than planned. So I usually end up starting it late, but I do allow 4 weeks. So I can usually get it done within 3 weeks and then get that first full draft off to the client. And then typically within a week or so, I'll get feedback. But again, your results may vary, and my results definitely vary. There are certain clients who will go unnamed that sometimes it can take a month or longer. And that drives you crazy because you've kind of moved on. You know, I'm thinking about prostates, and I'm not even thinking about memory anymore. And now you got me back on memory or whatever, you know. Yeah, so that's typically how the process goes. But in an ideal flow, 4 weeks to first draft, and then 2 weeks after that to final draft, and then it goes into design, and that might take about 2 weeks. So it's pretty much birthed within 2 months.
Okay, I want to jump back into rates. Obviously, don't have to share specific rates, but can you share just ballpark numbers of, you know, how much you're charging today? So especially the new copywriters know what, you know, they can aspire to eventually charge if they're working hard. And also just, you know, how you know when you should raise your rates.
I think it's important that a couple of things. One is you might hear that people are charging $15,000 or $20,000 or $25,000 or $30,000 to write a long form promo. But if you have never written one in your life, like obviously it would be unrealistic to think that you could just right out of the gate charge that much. On the other hand, I think it's important not to A, do things for free or on spec, and B, I think it's important to charge at least a reasonable amount of money for what you're doing. So what I'm going to be talking about as far as figures is for long form copy, and that's generally like, oh, I'm delivering a Word file that's probably at least 25 to 40 pages in length, so it's a lot of copy. So it can range anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000 plus royalties. And it depends on if it's a long form sales page, am I including, or is it like a direct mail promo, which could be, you know, as much as 32 pages or even 64 pages if it's a small format? Is it including things like, you know, emails or anything else, you know, to drive traffic to the sales page? If it's a direct mail promo, there's usually a lot more copy than a sales page because you've got sidebars and other things, that front and back covers that need to be written. So that's a range. And then my royalties can, you know, range from, you know, they're usually at least 4 to 5% or, you know, 4 cents per name, 3 to 4 cents per name. But I'm starting to feel like, and it's funny because I get on women, not, I don't get on them, but I, you know, I do kind of rag on them a little bit about, you know, especially women tend to underprice themselves. I mean, I've seen some women who don't do that, but, and I think it happens, I think it applies to the guys too. I mean, a lot of people do kind of undervalue what they do. And if you undervalue what you do, then how do you expect a client to value it, right? I mean, if you are a good copywriter and you know what you're doing, I mean, that's something that's really of value to a business. And if a business doesn't value that, then chances are you don't want to work with them in the first place. But yeah, I'm at a point where I'm booked out like a year, and I've got people still like begging to get on my schedule. And I'm thinking, you know what? I think maybe my prices are going to go up starting in January, or maybe sooner, you know, maybe it's time for a price rise. I mean, I just kind of raised them a little bit recently because I just realized, hey, you know what? More people want me than I can put in my slot on my schedule. So it's just like anything, you know, demand-based pricing.
Yeah.
Kim, imagine that I'm a just starting out copywriter and I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, I want to be there. That's the goal for me, whether that's in 2 years or in 10 years, whatever that looks like. What specifically would you recommend that I do in order to be the next Kim Krause-Schwalb?
Focus on what niche you feel most passionate about. Like, for example, if you were very interested in health and supplements, I would try to get on as many mailing lists and study what people are mailing as controls. Now, I have never done the whole method of writing controls out by hand, but a lot of people swear by it. And it does make a lot of sense just in terms of learning, you know, and how you learn by the movement of your hand, and it kind of cements things in your brain. So I would recommend maybe doing that, you know, write out some controls by hand, study what's working, and then try to get in the ground floor with some companies that promote supplements. Find the clients that need you to write those back-end promotions or those emails or those, you know, smaller projects and do well with them. Kind of work your way up to the Magalog. If you've never been able to, you know, if you don't have a sample of something, I'm assuming you don't, but it's kind of like what I did. Get to that point that you can get that first break, that opportunity, and build from there.
I'm going to jump back a bit because you mentioned that you'd worked on a project or two with bad design that, you know, potentially hurt your copy. And we've all dealt with that. How have you since learned how to deal with that, or, you know, and build it into your process so that you have the best design possible for your copy?
If I'm working with a client that doesn't already recognize the importance of good design, unfortunately, most of my clients are bigger, successful direct response companies who do work with the very top designers as well as copywriters, so I don't have that issue. But When I do work with the occasional client who's kind of a newbie, like I had one of these kind of recently where it was kind of a stretch to hire an A-level copywriter, and there was a whole lot of additional client management stuff I kind of had to go through with him. You know, I told him right up from the start, it's like, okay, I have like certain designers I like to work with, and you know, it's going to cost in this range, but I highly recommend that this is what we do. You know, it's going to give the copy, you know, and everything I do, you know, the greatest shot of being your next strong control. I basically refer them to the designers that I want to work with.
So jumping forward, you work with a few writers, I think, doing a little bit of coaching, at least on a limited basis. When you work with them, what are some of the mistakes that you see them making that you sort of like, oh, you absolutely, writers need to stop doing these things?
Well, that's kind of a topic for another whole long call.
We have time.
And it's funny, and I will just confess that sometimes in my first drafts, and I will go back and hopefully fix it, you know, and catch this myself, I make some of the same writing mistakes that I see a lot of cubs do, you know, or people who are starting out. Not being completely clear is a huge one, right? Making sure that main headline is clear. You know, don't try to be clever, or don't try to make it too long. Don't mix like three or four different ideas into one main headline or even into a sentence or paragraph, right? Because you gotta like look at it through your prospect's eyes and realize that they're gonna just get completely lost. Being clear or not being clear is, I think, a very common mistake. Another thing is long run-on sentences, right? This is why it does help to read your copy out loud. It also helps to have somebody else read your copy. I actually have a woman who's wonderful, and she's my avatar in so many ways for a lot of the products that I market, because she's in her early 60s. Most of what I write for in health is mostly going to a slightly older audience. And she has a background as a psychologist, and she also really knows direct marketing. She worked with Jay Abraham, she's worked with David Deutsch and many other people like over the years. So she's my copy therapist. So I will have her, especially when I have time, you know, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I gotta get to the client. I don't have time for three or four more days, but I will run it by her and she will read it from the perspective of my prospect. And it's always interesting to get that kind of feedback, you know, where I've tripped her up, where I've left her confused, where I've maybe said something, but it came across differently than how I intended. So I would recommend that you go through your copy, you make sure you're being clear, you look at every sentence, every word, you look at every word and you say, is this helping my copy? Is it hurting my copy? Or is it neutral? And if it's hurting your copy or it's neutral, get rid of it, because that's going to allow you to really tighten up your copy. And you make sure you have somebody read your copy, ideally who's an avatar, and get their feedback and find out where they're getting tripped up, what's confusing, etc.
I love that idea of having a a copy therapist. We all need a copy therapist, our very own.
Kira is my copy therapist.
Yay. Yeah, I feel like I have a few, so I'm good. So, Kim, how do you manage your clients and the entire process when you're working on a project so that you don't become a punching bag or even the client takes over and is telling you how to run the show, which happens to a lot of the new copywriters?
That's a tough one because it doesn't really happen to me anymore, but I've witnessed that situation maybe indirectly. Sometimes there are client red flags, right?
Yes.
I'm in a position where if I see red alert client flags, I can just say, you know what? I'm not going to take this project, right? So that's number one. If you see the red flags, just like avoid it, right? But maybe you feel like you can't, because you need the money or you want the project, you want to have a sample that comes out of it, whatever. Or two, which happens all too often, it's too late. You didn't see there were no warning signs and now you're in it and you're like, oh my God, this is a nightmare, right? I think what you need to learn to do is speak confidently directly to your client and know when and how to push back. So what you need to do is feel confident that you know what you're doing as a professional. They hired you to do a particular job. When you feel you need to push back and say, look, this is how, based on my experience with other companies and other successes I've had, this is really how we should do it. And this is how it's best for me to work and how you're going to get the best work out of me. And you need to just push back and tell your client that.
Sort of about owning the process.
So owning the process. Like, for example, and this isn't something that happened to me. Actually, I think it did with one client I worked with, who I will never work with again. But their process they do with all copywriters, before they have you go on to the full draft of copy, they want to see your headline and lead. Hmm. And there's a couple companies that do this with all their writers. I don't know if they do it specifically with less experienced writers, but I think they do it with all their writers. And then they have a whole committee of people who look at your headline and lead and decide which one they like best or which approach. And I think part of this too is they're determining, do they want to kill the project right there and not pay you anymore? Or do they want to go on to that next draft where they would then potentially be liable for more money, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a screening process, I think. But to me, the problem with that, at least the way that I write long form copy, is my process is a lot more organic. I mean, sometimes I'm starting with a headline and a lead and I'm going through. Sometimes I'm starting in the middle. Sometimes I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to get like the order form and some of these sidebars done just to feel like I'm getting going. And then I'm going to jump in. It's wherever I feel the inspiration, the ideas. And then even if I write that headline, you know, by the time I finish the promo, I'm like, that headline's not right. It sucks. Or there's five other buried headlines in my copy that I think are better. I'm going to use those, blah, blah, blah. So to me, that's like, you know, I don't start making the lasagna by putting the sauce on the bottom. I mean, I do actually when I make lasagna, but it's like, do you know what I mean? It's like, I kind of, you know, my copy equivalent would be, you know, put that ricotta in there and now let's put the bottom layer and now let's, you know, put the cheese on top or whatever. You know, it's not always in that classic order. So when a client is saying we want you to start with your best headlines and lead, it's kind of like, you haven't gotten deep into it yet. Like you haven't, right. Especially for a supplement, it's like, you know, you have to go look at, let's say there's five ingredients, like which one of these has the very best story? What's one going to be the star of this product? What am I going to lead with? And what are the other ones that play the supporting role? So you got to dig out all that research. You got to maybe start writing. I go, that's a really strong story. Oh, that could even be the headline. Oh, that could even be the lead or whatever. But you're not even going to get to that point until you're really digging into it, right? If you're just starting and you got this and you just got to write like four or five paragraphs and a headline, it's not a reflection of what you might actually be able to do with that promotion. So I think it's a very misguided approach.
Yeah, I find the same thing when I write. I'll start somewhere, but oftentimes as you move down the page, you find a better lead or a better hook, you know, as you go through. And so it sort of makes me sick to think that I have to live on the very first idea that I come up with or that first futile effort that I start with, because it just gets so much stronger as you work through the page.
Exactly. It just takes time to dig in and do that and get that research. And that's definitely one problem area I've seen. Again, I think client warning signs, you have to really trust your gut, right? Yes. Sometimes you just know this is not going to go well. I mean, I had one client, this was probably like 5 years ago, and I will just say, you know, not to be prejudiced or anything, but sometimes those solo companies where it's just a doctor who's got his own product line, like those can just be kind of problem clients, because it's not, you know, they're, again, they're kind of newbies to it. A lot of times they just have a problem paying anybody more money than they think they should earn.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, I have a friend who used to work for a practice, well, a whole company that was run by doctors, and she was basically the rainmaker, but they didn't think she should make money. You know what I mean? Because they were the doctors. It's like, no, you wouldn't have a business without the rainmaker. You know what I mean? So they don't always get that concept. But anyway, I could just tell he sent me at the time, I think I was charging $20,000, whatever, for Magalog. So he had sent me the $10,000 advance to hold my time. And I wasn't scheduled to start for 3 or 4 months anyway. But I could just tell with my dealings that, you know, there's just something about this guy. Like, he's going to be difficult, right? And then as it got closer, I think he had entered into some kind of arrangement with a marketing agency. And I guess that was going to cost him a lot of money. So he was like, you know, is it possible that maybe we could not do this? Or I might, you know, maybe do it another time, because I think I'm going to be doing this thing with this other agency. You know, and typically I would say, I'm sorry, you know, it says in all my paperwork, I mean, $10,000 advance is non-refundable, right? Because I literally turned down other projects for that slot, right? And I'm saving it for you. But as it turned out, another client, it actually was the one that originally gave me the retainer arrangement when I was first starting out, he called me. He's like, hey, I've got this project. I'm wondering if you could fit me in. And I'm like, you're in. This guy is out. And I called this guy, or I called him, or sent him an email. I'm like, you know what? As it turns out, if you feel like it's not the right time to proceed, I have someone else who will take that slot. And I couldn't send him back his $10,000 fast enough. And he was thrilled. Yeah. I was just like, I don't need any problems. I mean, I could have technically kept it. But right. I'm like, you know what?
Just get rid of him.
I don't need this kind of hassle in my life.
It is amazing how you always know in your gut when that first conversation or even that first email, when it's going to be a problem. And then, you know, when I've overlooked it, it ends up being a problem. I just have to trust my gut.
You do have to trust your gut. And yeah, so there's a whole process. I mean, I've had other people I get in email conversations about, and I can just tell when they're just trying a little too hard to try to get my price down, or they're not willing to pay. I'll just say, like, you know, I'm sorry we can't come to terms. It would be nice to work with you. It doesn't sound like you're willing to spend what it takes to, you know, for a copywriter of my level, but I wish you the best. And if there's other people that I can refer you to that maybe aren't as expensive, I'm happy to do so.
Yeah.
I'm not going to suddenly give you this huge discount. No one's going to feel good about that. I'm not going to feel good about it. I mean, they might feel like they're getting a deal, but bottom line is they're not valuing what I bring to the table. And I want to work with people who value what I can do for them.
Kim, I want to ask another really big question that probably could be its own episode. You have worked very closely with a lot of A-listers, and even if you haven't worked with them, you know, they know you, you know them. You know, Gary Bensavenga's talked about you. Brian Kurtz has talked about you. I think you worked with Clayton Makepeace when you launched Healthy Directions. And so I'm curious, what are some of the top two or three lessons that you've learned from these other A-list copywriters that have really moved your business forward?
One of the top ones has really improved my copy a lot. And I already shared some of that. You know, when you were talking about mistakes that I see in copy, you know, that younger copiers or newer copywriters make.
Uh-huh.
So Paris Lampropoulos, I think everybody's heard of him. He has an arrangement with Soundview, which is also known as Advanced Bio-Nutritionals, where he copy chiefs everybody that they work with. So while Paris has his own group of copy cubs that he mentors, and I'm not one of his cubs, anybody that Soundview or Advanced Bio-Nutritionals hires to write copy, he also serves as copy chief. I think that's the client I was referring to. I mean, I probably had at least a dozen. I can't even count. I mean, it's probably higher. Pretty much every promotion I've written for them since, you know, the last 12 years that I've written for them has become a control. But all my copy is always copy chiefed by Paris when I write for them. So I've learned a lot from him. And yeah, he has really helped me, you know, be more clear with my copy and make sure I'm being, you know, it's tighter and more concise. I think another thing is, you know, get more story into your copy, especially when it comes to studies. Again, when you're writing a lot of copy about supplements, studies are critical, you know, for providing proof. However, you want to make sure you're romancing the story more, that you're telling it like a story versus just reporting on, you know, a group of scientists found that people who did this got 46% higher, you know, like you want to dimensionalize it more, right? Like a story. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, some of his feedback has helped me get a lot better at that. I think I just worked once or twice directly with Clayton. Clayton, it's been years, but Clayton is all about getting that emotion into your copy, right? He taps a lot into anger quite well. He's really good at that. So that's something that I've gained from working with him and studying his copy. Those are the ones that primarily come to mind.
What do you think these A-list copywriters, including yourself, is there something that you all embody? Is it that you're just really, you know, hardworking individuals that have been critiqued over the years to excel? Or what is it that you all have? If there's one thing.
I think we have an insatiable curiosity.
Yeah.
Being very curious, asking those questions, digging deeper and deeper and deeper to find out what is that USP? What are those possible objections people are going to have? Just digging, digging deeper, being curious, being relentless, not just phoning it in. Right.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's the differentiating factor right there.
So Kim, we could talk copy, I think, for hours. Before we run out of time, I really want to touch on what you're doing to help other women in the copywriting space. You've created a group. I think you've done some training. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Back in November, I created a free Facebook group. It's called The Girls Club. If any women out there would like to join, it's an amazing group of female copywriters and marketers and entrepreneurs. It's pretty much like any, it's very similar to your group, because I'm also a member of your wonderful group. You know, you can post questions, you can get feedback, or you can just share something that you think everybody's going to find kind of humorous. We occasionally have some free group calls that I host where we'll talk about a specific topic. And every month I highlight a woman who's really, you know, kicking butt and having success. So I think that that's inspiring. It's not one of these groups where it's all about Kim. It's really all about the women in that group and women elevating other women. So that's what I'm doing with that group. And I did have my first boot camp session, which I purposely kept small. And it was just one day back in early March in Los Angeles. It was actually more than half guys. I didn't limit it to just women. But yeah, we had a great session. And I definitely would like to do more of those in the future.
So if our listeners want to hear more from you, they can join the Facebook group. And if they want to attend a future boot camp, where can they find more information?
So I'm glad you asked. I do have a landing page, which needs some work. I mean, I do have my own website, which people are welcome to go to. It's kimschwalm.com. I haven't done anything to it in like 8 or 9 years. Just to get more information about me.
I should jump in, Kim, and say your portfolio there is full of these long form sales maglogs and VSLs and some of the things that you've done. And it's basically, you could spend a day or two there just going to school on the successes that you've had and the work that you've done there. I think it's a great resource.
Yeah, I think I was able to put in like 5 pages of each of the print things, because sometimes my clients really don't want me to put the whole thing out there. But yeah, you can definitely study a lot. But I want to encourage the guys and gals in your audience to go to themarketingsuperpower.com. And if you go there, like I said, I want to try to make this a little bit nicer landing page, but you know, whatever, it does the job. But if you go there, you can request a free report, which has my top 7 strategies for creating winning promotions. I think I call it the A-list copywriter's manifesto. And so that'll put you on my list, and you'll find out about anything that I have, you know, going on for guys or gals. And you also, the women will find out about the Girls Club there. If you get on my list, and just the main thing is when you put your email in, make sure you respond to the opt-in message. You got to click on that, or else you're not going to get the free report. You're not going to get on the list. And a lot of times that ends up in the junk mail folder. So everybody who's listening should go to themarketingsuperpower.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kim, for joining us today and sharing all of your experiences and insights with us. It's really been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. I really enjoyed talking with both of you.
Before we end the podcast, we just want to tell you about our sponsor, AirStory. AirStory is an application designed to help you write faster. And it does a few things really well. It makes collaborating with others on your team easier. So if you work with clients or other team members on projects, you'll love the way that you can interact within your project documents. But there are two things that we really like about AirStory that you won't get with Word or Google Docs. The first is the way that it lets you organize information into cards. If you refer to research or other information when writing blog posts or websites or sales pages, you'll love the way that you can organize bits of information or entire articles into a card file that you can then drag and drop into your document. And if you do your research online, AirStory's Chrome extension lets you cut and save information directly into AirStory. It's pretty cool. Plus, AirStory has a library of templates that you can use on different projects. So let's say that you've been hired to write a sales page or an email sequence and you don't have any experience or you want additional inspiration for the project. You can go into the template library, find a template for what you're working on, and use it to start your document. Maybe best of all, you can try it now for free. In fact, one project at AirStory is always free. If you're a professional writer, there's so much here that can help you. Check it out at airstory.co/club. You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hugg and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.